SaskAg Today with Doug Faulkner.
Good afternoon and welcome to SaskAg Today. Coming up on today's program, some good news for farmers heading into the growing season. The federal government has decided to raise the interest-free limit on the advance payments program, better known as the cash advance. We'll hear from Dave Gallant with the Canadian Canola Growers Association, who is one of 28 administrators that handled the advance payments program. We will also have some reaction to that news from the CEO of the Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association and the president of the Canadian Cattle Association as well. We will also have the latest on the livestock markets when it comes to feeder steer prices in Saskatchewan and heifer prices as well, from provincial cattle specialist Fonda Froats. And a weekly overview of the wheat market has been provided by Michael Wilton of Mercantile Consulting Venture. All of those stories and much more coming up on today's edition of SaskAg Today. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Milligan Bio. Milligan Bio now offers bio-meal for your livestock, giving your animals more protein, more energy, and more of what they need. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. Some good news for farmers heading into the growing season. The federal government has decided to raise the interest-free limit on the advance payments program, better known as the cash advance. The interest-free limit had been slated to drop to just $100,000 on Monday, April 1st, but after extensive lobbying by agricultural organizations, it will be set at $250,000. While that's less than the current one-time $350,000 interest-free limit for 2023, agricultural organizations are supporting the announcement. The Canadian Canola Growers Association is one of 28 administrators that handled the advance payments program on behalf of the federal government. We spoke to Dave Gallant, the CCGA's Vice President of Finance and Advance Payment Program Operations, late yesterday afternoon.
From our standpoint, it's good to know before April the 1st, the program starts April 1. So what we are doing is we are making changes in our system today. We only found out about it this afternoon at about 2 o'clock, but we will be making the necessary changes so that we'll be in a position to issue the full $250,000 interest-free to farmers come April the 1st.
He was pleased to see Ottawa act so quickly on making the change producers had been requesting.
Well, what we were told is that the process has been going on behind the scenes with the government for at least a week or two, because today is when the Governor General signed off on this change. So all the processing behind the scenes that the government needs to do to make this effective happened beforehand. And so we were told that it's effective as of today. And so we just need to get our agreements with our banks and everything else modified to reflect the $250,000. And once that goes into place, our system will allow us to start issuing the $250,000.
Gallant expects producers will see the new number in their statements come Monday.
That is correct. We've got about 25 to 2,700 applications in already. We're getting about 120 a day. So anything that's ready to be issued on April the 1st, we will issue up to the $250,000 interest-free.
But he notes the Canadian Canola Growers Association aren't the only ones administering the advance payment program.
That is correct. Every administrator is going to have to go through their own process to get their agreement signed with AFC, their banking agreement signed, and then make whatever changes they need to in their system. What I can tell our customers and any farmers who want to use CCGA, we've got all that in place already. I was on the phone with the banks this afternoon. We expect to have all our approvals in place by Thursday, which means we'll be able to issue our funds up to the $250,000 interest-free come Monday morning.
That's Dave Gallant with the Canadian Canola Growers Association. The CCGA is one of 28 organizations that administers the advance payments program on behalf of the federal government. Yesterday afternoon, Federal Agriculture Minister Lawrence McAuley announced the interest-free portion of the advance will be $250,000 instead of the previously announced $100,000. It's time now for the Beef and Forage Report, and that's a presentation of Bumper to Bumper in Langenberg and Rokenville, your auto parts professionals. Let them find the parts no one else can. Open 8 to 6 Monday to Saturday. Call 306-743-2332.
Beef and Forage Report.
For cow-calf operations, a major component of profitability is reproductive efficiency, or the number of calves weaned per cow exposed. When open rates are higher than expected, it can be difficult to pinpoint the cause. There may be many factors that contributed. Dry conditions over the past several years have impacted many aspects of beef operations, including those that contribute to open rates. The quantity and quality of forage available to many cow herds has been reduced due to dry conditions. Pasture may be unable to supply the energy needed for cows to maintain their body conditions. Cows in lower body condition at calving will be slower to resume cycling following calving, conceive later in the breeding season, and calve later the next year, or remain open if unable to conceive before bulls are pulled. To maintain herd size, more replacement heifers may be kept to compensate for an increase in open cows. And that's today's Beef and Forage Report. As you heard, the federal government announced yesterday the interest-free portion of the advance payments program has increased to $250,000 this year. The sudden quick change to the amount comes about a month after the initial announcement of $100,000, which was the original amount for many years. Many farm groups had played a role, including the Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association, Canadian Cattle Association, and APAS, to name a few. CEO of the Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association, Grant McClellan, was happy to hear about it.
Yeah, we were certainly pleased to see that announcement. It's something that we had joined with a number of organizations across Saskatchewan and Canada in calling for that increase to be to remain, frankly. It was scheduled to go back down from $350,000 to $100,000 interest-free. And so we advocated very strongly that that should not drop. So we're, even though we'd like to see it at the $350,000, we're certainly pleased that it has increased to $250,000.
President of the Canadian Cattle Association, Nathan Finney, says they were also lobbying for the interest-free amount to return to $350,000, but $250,000 is a step in the right direction.
It's an important tool for our young producers to be able to have the ability to secure financing through the APP. And, you know, given where interest rates have risen over the past, you know, year to 18 months, it's a sure help for the young producers trying to get in or just getting into farming as a tool that really helps, you know, lower those interest costs for them so it can help set them up for success.
Numbers from the federal government show the change will save nearly 12,000 participating producers an additional $4,916 in interest costs on average, for a total savings of up to $58.7 million. It's time now for the Ag Review portion of our program, and that's a presentation of New Era Ag Technologies in Swan River.
GX94, Ag Review.
The Agricultural Producers Association of Saskatchewan and the Saskatchewan Wheat Development Commission are co-hosting the Canada Grain Act Summit. The federal government sought input on some potential changes to the Act a few years ago, but nothing concrete has proceeded from that point regarding legislative changes. This is APAS President Ian Boxall.
With a new commissioner and a chief commissioner being announced, you know, with Doug Chorney's retirement, I think there's an opportunity here to maybe lay out some stuff prior to this appointment so that the new commissioner and the new group of commissioners have some direction from producers, which is who they're supposed to represent. You know, I think that's important as to why it is now, why now is the time to do it. I also think maybe putting a little pressure, you know, hearing from the government that they have the changes in the Act ready to go to the House, the legislation changes that they want, but yet nothing's happened with them. Maybe this is a little way that we could push it a little bit.
The Canada Green Act Summit is being held in Saskatoon today. Leaders in Canada's hemp industry were hoping an expert committee would recommend significant changes to hemp regulation so it could be treated the same as wheat, canola, and other crops. That didn't happen. Instead, the committee of experts reviewing the Cannabis Act barely mentioned hemp in its 91-page report published March 21st. The Canadian Hemp Trade Alliance said the report fails to provide meaningful guidance on how Canada should manage and oversee hemp production and processing in the future. Health Canada has regulated the cultivation of hemp since hemp was first grown in Canada in the late 1990s, requiring farmers to get a license to grow the crop. Initially, farmers accepted those constraints, but over the last 10 to 15 years, growers and hemp advocates have lobbied the federal government to deregulate the crop and free it from Health Canada regulations. The head of Canada's second biggest railway enjoyed a big jump in compensation after a historic year for the company as it integrated a major acquisition. Financial filings from Canadian Pacific Kansas City show that CEO Keith Creel's total compensation rose 38% to $20.1 million last year. CPKC's five top officers, including Creel, earned $63.5 million overall in 2023, compared with less than half that amount the previous year. The boost enjoyed by the entire C-suite stemmed largely from share-based awards and cash bonuses after Calgary-based Canadian Pacific merged its operations with Kansas City Southern in April. At rival Canadian National Railway, total compensation for its six senior executives decreased 3% to $29.6 million, mainly due to lower bonuses after the Montreal-based company fell short of performance targets. CEO Tracy Robinson's compensation nudged up by 2% to $14 million, mainly due to the fact she joined as CEO 2 months into 2022, so she was not paid for a full year. Managed money fund traders continued to chip away at their large net short position in canola in mid-March, covering more of their large bearish bets. That's according to the latest Commitments of Traders report from the United States Commodity Futures Trading Commission. As of March 19th, the net managed money short position in canola futures came in at 124,887 contracts, which was down by roughly 11,000 contracts from the previous week and the smallest short position in 2 months. Open interest in the canola market was up 5,410 contracts on the week at 300,421 contracts. At the Chicago Board of Trade, the net short position in soybeans decreased by about 8,000 contracts to come in at around 138,600 contracts. Samples of milk collected from sick cattle in Kansas and Texas tested positive for avian flu, but the nation's milk supply is safe, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The detections in milk and a dairy cow show the wide reach of the virus, known as bird flu, which has been found in poultry flocks and mammals around the world. The USDA, along with the FDA and CDC, are investigating dairy cows in Kansas, Texas, and New Mexico with symptoms including decreased milk production and low appetite. So far, unpasteurized clinical samples of milk collected from two dairy farms in Kansas and one in Texas tested positive for highly pathogenic avian flu. A cattle swab test from another dairy in Texas also was positive. Based on findings from Texas, wild birds, which spread the virus globally, appear to have introduced the virus to cattle. And SaskAg Today is always available on podcast. Listen to past shows whenever you want. Find them easily by going to gx94radio.com. Also, you can hear the podcast on your Amazon Echo. Just enable the GX94 skill and choose SaskAg Today. And yes, it is free. And that's the Ag Review portion of our program. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will be back in 1 minute's time. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Falconer. It's sunny and minus 13 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. Some of the feeder steer prices in Saskatchewan were way up, but some of the feeder heifer prices were down. That's a summary of the cattle market update for the week ending March 22nd. Provincial cattle specialist Fonda Froats has the details.
Saskatchewan feeder prices were a bit mixed but strong at the markets last week. Feeder steers ranged from $486.25 for the 400 to 500 pound category down to $316.20 per hundredweight for the 900 plus pound steers. Category prices for steers were primarily higher since March 15th. The 400 to 500 steer category improved the most at $14.58 per hundredweight over the prior week. The average price for steers in the 800 to 900 pound category declined the most at $2.23 per hundredweight compared to the last report. And average prices for Saskatchewan heifers ranged from $407.38 for the 400 to 500 pound category down to $302.84 for the 800 plus pound category. And average prices amongst the heifers were mixed. We saw the highest increase in the 700 to 800 weight heifers, which improved $4.12 per hundred weight, while the largest decline was in the 800 plus pound heifers, and that was $4.49 per hundred weight below the prior week.
She says there's a more positive outlook in the industry that's affecting the feeder markets.
I think it's a combination between the futures, the lower feed costs, thoughts of like supply on cattle. And I think we're just, you know, there's a improved positive outlook in the industry as we look towards the second half of the year. And they're all those factors are supporting the feeder market.
Last week, there were 12,210 Saskatchewan feeder cattle marketed, above the 9,158 feeder cattle marketed the previous week. On the market-ready cattle side, Froats noted prices were up last week.
D2 cows averaged $166.25 per hundredweight, and this was up $3.81 above the previous week. And D3 cows were also up $4.81 per hundredweight over the previous week, and their average was $145.92 per hundredweight. And the CanFax price for Alberta fed steers on March 22nd was down just $1.15 per hundredweight over the previous week to average $233.10.
Fonda Froats is a provincial cattle specialist with the Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture. Please stay tuned. Your livestock market conditions are coming up next.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for April closed at 183.10 today. That's down 3.10. June live cattle closed at 178.37, down 3.22. April feeder cattle closed at 245.45, down 5 full cents. May feeder cattle closed at 247.25, down 5.37. April lean hogs closed at 85.57, up 42. May lean hogs closed at 91.75, down 17. And that's the livestock market conditions. A weekly overview of the wheat market has been provided by Michael Wilton of Mercantile Consulting Venture. It was issued through the Saskatchewan Wheat Development Commission.
U.S. wheat futures bounced off the previous week's lows as Russia bombed port infrastructure in Ukraine and is forcing the sale of the major Russian exporter, RIF Trading House. As far as some of the most important news that happened in the wheat markets, we will start with a quick note on those significant events in Russia. So, the owner of the major Russian exporter, RIF Trading House, or RIF, is being forced to sell its assets for a price that would not even cover the company's debts. There's little known on why the owner is being forced to sell by the Russian government, but the RIF ships with Russian wheat are being blocked from leaving ports. We hear reports that 3 to 4 RIF ships are not being granted phytosanitary certifications, which is keeping them docked. RIF Trading House is a major exporter of Russian grains, especially wheat, and this is seen as bullish should the dispute continue. Otherwise, Russia has been attacking the important port city of Odessa. Russia also launched its largest attack on Ukraine's energy infrastructure over the weekend. Meanwhile, Ukraine attacked two Russian naval vessels and communication facilities at the Crimean port of Sevastopol. In the past, the trade would have reacted strongly to this news, but has since experienced the resiliency of Black Sea shipping despite the conflict. Okay, so that's some of the most important news that's been affecting the wheat markets at the end of last week / the beginning of this week. But now let's head on over to Canada, where the AAFC incorporated Stats Canada's seeded acreage estimate, which resulted in a 450,000-ton increase in the AAFC's expected production to 28.9 million tons. This is 4% higher than last year. Our current production estimate, this is for non-durum wheat that we're talking about, is 29.3 million tons, so higher yet, given our larger seeded area forecast. We are expecting larger 23-24 exports, which decreases our carry-in number. So the AAFC and our total supply numbers are actually quite similar at 32.1 million tons, which is 3% higher than last year. The AAFC agrees with our total use estimate of 28.5 million tons, but they think that feed use will be higher while we are calling for more exports. Our ending stock numbers are similar at 3.6 million tons, but this reflects a 30% increase from our ending stock number of last year, versus the AAFC is calling for an 18% increase year over year because their ending stock number for this last year is quite a bit higher than ours. As far as the weekly non-durum exports go, exports in week 33 were quite big at 515,000 tons. Most of the exports were from the West Coast, but there was also a vessel shipped from the St. Lawrence. Wheat exports will need to slow eventually, as the current pace is an annualized 21.3 million tons compared to the AAFC and our export number of 20.25, that's the AAFC's, and 20.5 million tons, that's our number. Current ending stock estimates are 2.6 million tons, that's our ending stock number, which is the lowest in recent history. Producer deliveries were 566,000 tons last week, so visible supply grew to 2.5 million tons, which will support strong exports in the near future. For durum, the AAFC is estimating Canadian durum production in 24-25, that's in the upcoming crop season, will be 40% larger than the current year due to better yields and a 5% increase in seeded area. Although we are forecasting a 2% increase in seeded area, our production estimate is actually similar to the AAFC's number, given our slightly higher yield estimate of 34 bushels per acre. Both the AAFC and Mercantile have total supply at about 6.1 million tons, which is 37% larger year over year. Exports would need to be about 4.5 million tons to keep ending stocks from becoming burdensome. While this has been done often enough in the past, the wild card for the next crop year will be Turkey, and whether they will have a similar export program in the upcoming year, which would compete with Canadian supplies. While we're talking about Turkey, we will mention that moisture conditions there remain fairly strong. The country received just 58% of normal rainfall in February, but cumulative rainfall from October to the end of February is anywhere from 42 to 100% higher than last year, depending on the region. Vegetation maps for Turkey also show an improvement from last year. Wheat harvest in Turkey starts in July, so this will need to be watched, as Turkey was a major influence on the durum market this past year. There was some cash trade in durum. Algeria tendered for 50,000 tons of durum, but instead bought anywhere from 100,000 to 200,000 tons of durum. The price was not reported, but was rumored to be about $395 per ton on a CNF basis. This calculates to about $10.50 per bushel at the elevator in Saskatchewan, from either coast, whether it's Vancouver or whether it's coming from the lakes, which is interesting because that's not always the case that both sides of Canada work back to Saskatchewan at pretty much the same value. The tender was timed such that Mexico's new crop durum harvest might help lower prices. Mexico usually starts harvesting in around about the beginning of April. There was also some speculation that Turkey might sell some more durum. Now there are rumors, and I remind you, this is unconfirmed, but the rumor is that 90 to 120,000 tons of Algeria's tender will be Canadian durum. It's said that 60,000 tons will be from Vancouver and about 30 to 60,000 tons will be from the St. Lawrence. Meanwhile, another 60,000 tons will be shared by Australia and Mexico. The shipping windows for the Algeria tender is the first half and the last half of April. There is currently 50,000 tons of durum in terminals on the St. Lawrence and 17.2 thousand tons of durum in Vancouver. Algeria's last tender was on January 10th when they bought durum from Canada, Mexico, and Australia at a price that at the time we worked back to about $13 per bushel at the elevator in Saskatchewan. And while we're still on durum, we'll mention that the EU Commission is formalizing a proposal to implement a 148 euro per ton duty on durum wheat imported from Russia. If executed, this would be positive for Canadian exports into the EU and the Middle East. The Russian crop was estimated at 500,000 tons last year. Some of it might have been included in the Turkish durum sales. For Canadian weekly durum exports, week 33 saw another strong durum export program with 135.7 thousand tons of durum shipped. Most of the volume was through Vancouver, but there was also some, about a vessel's worth, shipped from the St. Lawrence. Total exports are now 2.2 million tons, which means Canada needs to ship another 1 million tons to meet the AAFC's number. This would be approximately an average of about 54,000 tons per week, which is possible. Our estimate is currently just 100,000 tons less, but we're currently on track to meet the AAFC's number, which is positive. As far as our durum recommendations, we think that you should have sold your durum crop sales a while ago. If you were following our recommendations, you'd already been sold. But if not, there could be some opportunities here from the recent sales to Algeria. We also recommend that you continue to watch for new crop opportunities. Although there's no rush to sell, the balance sheet for the upcoming year does look heavy if competition with Turkish durum again limits Canada's exports. And let's head back down to the U.S., where U.S. wheat sales were reported as net reductions of 109.6 thousand tons, which was within the trade estimates. Most of the reduction was to China, which was shown to have canceled 263 thousand tons worth of wheat, but there were also reductions to the Philippines and South Korea. Total commitments are now 18.4 million tons, which is 3% ahead of last year. U.S. sales for the upcoming marketing year, so that's the 2024-25 marketing year, have been strong so far. Total new crop sales are 1.6 million tons, which is 45% more than last year. The Philippines is showing strong early demand as the country has already spoken for 332,000 tons of new crop wheat. And we go to Australia, where Australian wheat futures were supported by dry conditions and deteriorating soil moisture. Seeding in the New South Wales, Queensland, and South Australia begins in April, while seeding in Western Australia usually starts in May. The forecast is dry, apart from some showers in the south, as the La Nina builds. In Argentina, soil moisture conditions are deteriorating in some key wheat growing regions. Wheat seeding in Argentina begins in May. In the European Union, Matif wheat futures were higher on the standoff between Moscow and the owner of the major shipping firm Riff Trading House. Also, farmers in the EU continue to protest the cheap grain coming from Ukraine. Cheap Ukrainian grain is replacing EU supplies, which is increasingly struggling to compete on the global market because of domestic climate policies. The EU Commission is implementing tariffs on grain imports from Russia and Belarus. Imported wheat and durum from these countries will be subject to a 95 euros per ton tariff on common wheat, and as we mentioned before, a 148 euros per ton tariff on durum. These tariffs will most importantly impact high protein and durum shipments to Italy and Greece, but will otherwise have limited impact on imports from the EU. Imports of Russian wheat into the EU have spiked since the beginning of the war in Ukraine, but they still only account for about 2% of total Russian exports. In the Black Sea, we've already mentioned about the owner of the major Russian exporter, Rift Trading House, being forced to sell its assets. We'll keep an eye on this. It's unknown as to why the rift between and the Russian government started, but it could add some bullishness or at least restrict exports for the short term. The government is also decreasing, but not eliminating, the export tax on grains from Russia. Farmers have been increasingly critical of the tax as global prices fall, squeezing their margins. Russia's upcoming wheat crop is in strong condition. It is too early to know what the spring crop will produce, since it's not planted yet, but the current range of estimates of Russia's total wheat crop is in the anywhere from 90 to 100 million tons. Sov Econ raised its forecast by 400,000 tons from last week to 94 million tons, which is in line. I think ICAR had their estimate at 93 million tons last week, if I recall correctly. As far as some of the significant purchases and trades go, we had Japan booking 221,000 tons of wheat via their regular tender. It was reported that 113,000 tons of this was U.S. origin. Otherwise, we had GASC buying 50,000 tons of Bulgarian wheat and 60,000 tons of Romanian wheat at anywhere from $251.25 on a CIF basis to $255.25. That was from Romania. These prices translate to about $215 per ton on a FOB basis, which is above the nominal market. There was 1.3 million tons of Russian wheat offered at the tender, but none of it traded, as Russian traders stuck to the $235 FOB floor price. Again, while the nominal market is closer to $203 per ton. Romanian, Bulgarian, and French wheat was all cheaper than Russian wheat on a CIF basis, again, because of that floor price. Since Egypt devaluated and floated its pound, this was the most expensive wheat purchase, this is in local Egyptian pound currency, that was ever done. The GASC tender highlights one of the issues that's facing Ukrainian farmers. While freight prices for Russian and Romanian wheat were about $20 to $25, Russia's freight price that was offered, this was the freight price that was offered on Ukrainian wheat, was $50 per ton. This extra expense will need to come out of Ukraine's FOB price and ultimately the price that the Ukrainian farmer receives. As far as the outlook goes, Russian and Black Sea politics will likely dominate conversations in the coming week. If the dispute between RIF and Moscow continues, it could be bullish for the current crop. The USDA seeded area and quarterly stocks reports are out on Thursday. The trade is expecting larger wheat stocks at 1 billion bushels and smaller seeded area at 47.3 million acres. All this is combined with a short trading week given the Good Friday holiday on Friday. We do not recommend additional cash sales at this time.
That's Michael Wilton of Mercantile Consulting Venture in Winnipeg. Please stay tuned. Your Commodities Update is coming up next.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures closed down across the board today. May canola closed at 638 $6.50, down $11.20. July canola closed at $648 per metric ton, down $11.40. May Minneapolis wheat closed at $6.47 and a quarter, down $0.12. May Kansas City wheat closed at $5.77 and a quarter, down $0.12 as well. May Chicago wheat closed at $5.43 and a half, down $0.11. May corn closed at $4.32 and a half, down $0.05. May soybeans closed at $11.99 per bushel, down $0.10. May oats closed at $3.57 and a half, down $0.0375. And that's the commodities update. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Faulkner. It's 1 o'clock in Saskatchewan, 2 o'clock in Manitoba. Time to check the GX94 precision weather forecast. For the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today, sunny skies, winds north-northeast at 15 to 25, and a high of minus 8. For tonight, clear, winds north-northwest at 10 to 20, a low of minus 21. For tomorrow, sunny, winds northwest at 10 to 20, a high of minus 6, an overnight low of minus 19. For Thursday, mainly sunny, winds southeast at 10 to 20, a high of minus 3. For Friday, a 90% chance of snow and a high of minus 3. Saturday, mainly cloudy with a 20% chance of snow showers and flurries, a high of minus 2. In the Paw, Swan River, Brandon, and Roblin, it's minus 9 degrees. Dauphin, minus 13. Show Lake Russell, minus 11. Regina and Hudson Bay are at minus 9. Saskatoon, minus 8. Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, minus 11. The Yorkton Melville region has a sunny sky, a north wind at 24 kilometers an hour. 59% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 13 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 22 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for SaskAg Today for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.